Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. I'm your host, John Peters, and I'm joined by Kyle McKelvey. This week on the pod, we are talking about Super Regionals and looking ahead to the College World Series. Let's talk college baseball. Omaha, Omaha, Kyle, we're here.
Omaha.
Yeah, this is the time of year my dog shines. His name is Omaha. And like anytime we're watching the games or anything like that, or anytime I'm talking about it, he definitely feels like he's involved. So he gets really excited about everything.
I mean, that's like the biggest win of this time of year, I think, that your dog is excited. Hopefully you like reach down and pet him every once in a while, like when we're talking.
Yeah, give him some treats to make him think that, yeah, keep that training up. So he's a blue tick coonhound mix. And I was kind of hopeful that if Tennessee made it to the College World Series and Blue Tick Coonhounds, the official state dog of Tennessee and one of the like secondary mascots at Tennessee, I was hopeful that he could apply for like temporary mascot of the Tennessee Vols, but was not meant to be. No Omaha for the Vols.
No Omaha for Omaha. We have to stay at home this year.
And then I want to say something to Aggie fans. I saw someone on Reddit, I think, say like beat the hell out of Omaha. And I was like, no, I don't like that. You know, like as someone with a dog named Omaha, I'm not sure how I feel about that statement.
Well, it's not your dog. It's the whole Omaha feel, let's say.
Yeah, but Omaha is here. We have our 8 teams, and it all comes down to this. No team gets to Omaha by accident, and we have a pretty exciting field. But before we get into that, I want to talk about a little bit about what happened in Super Regionals, because upsets galore. What was the thing that most surprised you from the Super Regional round?
There are a few things. I just wasn't as familiar with the fans at ECU, but I was really surprised, and pleasantly so, with the fact that they were still riding with their team down 8-4 runs, like with going into the 6-hour break. And then they came back after that and still were going strong. And that's just, maybe that's just because I haven't been over to Greenville, and I should reconcile that, but
diehard fans.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible that they were a little alcohol encouraged, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the rowdy group in the jungle for sure. But yeah, the rumblings on Twitter were that during the restart they weren't checking tickets and they were just letting anyone in. So like just getting the crowd packed in there, which I love it. Yeah, the jungle did not disappoint. I think that they made a nice statement to the world that ECU belonged in the tournament and that they would do a great job hosting Super Regionals, and they sold out all these games, like 6,000 fans basically at all of them. So like clearly East Carolina fans showed up.
Yeah, and they were like, I don't know, 3 innings away from making it in game 2, sweeping Texas, and then the bullpen kind of blew up and they let up 7 runs in the last 3 innings.
Yeah.
Got walked off on their own field. Kind of sucks.
I don't know if I would put that in the world of most surprising things, because I think the offense is just so good, but definitely in the list of most heartbreaking things. I think toss up, it goes between that and Southern Miss getting shut out in both games at home.
Yeah, but like there you at least know it's coming. So like over the course of the three-hour game, you're like, well, this is, I see.
Speaking of 3-hour games, I think the thing that most surprised me about the Super Regional round was the 4-hour games that were happening in College Station, and 4-plus-hour games that happened in College Station. And they weren't even like slugfests. I think if I go to a 4.5-hour game, I expect the score to be 15-14. And if I go to a game between A&M and Louisville, I expect the score to be 15-14. And we had 2 1-run low-scoring games. Like, what the heck? I think that was shocking. The offense. I mean, the pitching staff for Louisville is the epitome of bend don't break, I think, with the Aggies loading the bases 5 times in that game 1 and only scoring on the last opportunity in the 9th there. wild games that led to somehow shockingly low scoring games in the College Station Super.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, A&M's offense is really clutch. But they seem to, I mean, credit to Louisville pitching this weekend. They shut them down when they needed to. Like, they definitely bent but didn't break a lot of times. They had a ton of walks, a few errors here and there, and yeah, like loaded the bases so many times. I think there were three more in the second game that they loaded the bases. And yeah, I mean, it was a really fun two games. I kind of wish, based on the level of play, that it would have gone three, just because we would have had more of that really intense matchup with that really great, really cool College Station crowd.
Yeah, let's segue this now into our talk. Let's go actually super by super. There's only eight of them, so we should have time to go through all of them. And let's start with the College Station super and maybe some big takeaways. We've talked about these one-run games. I think it's fair to say, in some regards, these were pitcher's duels. Maybe not your most traditional of pitcher's duels. These weren't, your 95 pitches through seven innings, zero run type of games. And in fact, the Aggies, I think, saw over 200 pitches in that first game. So it was a lot. It was a lot for that Louisville pitching staff. But I want to turn to the Aggie pitching staff a little bit here. Micah Dallas did okay. Nathan Detmer did okay. And okay was enough. Do you have a different interpretation of that? Like, I think I'm a little scared about whether or not Dallas's newfound confidence that he's gotten from his last three starts is projectable moving forward. What's your take on that? Do you think Micah Dallas is a good number two right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a pretty consistent number two. I think his last two starts before the Louisville start, he went like five innings, and it's really consistent five innings. It only a few runs given up. I think there were zero runs given up in this SEC tournament. We were there for that one, I should know. But
that feels like a lifetime ago, though.
It does, doesn't it? But I mean, he's been really consistent, like not one home run here and there, not a ton of walks, not a ton of strikeouts, but just going pretty consistently, almost five innings every time. Yeah, because this one was 4 2/3. And I think it's pretty much the A&M bullpen that is the consistent piece for them that Aggies can really like rely on, because like Will Johnston, Brad Rutas, and Jacob Polish and Moo Menifee, those arms, like they throw low to mid 90s for some of them, and they're really consistent and really good at getting strikeouts when they need them to. Did you see that second game where Schloss changed the pitcher in the middle of the at bat on a full count? And then
that is probably my managerial move of the year. Yeah. Like, it was nine pitches into the at bat in the ninth, freshman on the mound. Clearly the hitter had figured things out. Like, he was timing up.
He was fouling off everything.
Yeah. And it was just like, you just had that feeling of like, well, this is, you know, where Louisville walks it off in College Station because of how the Supers do their home team. And Schloss comes out and it's like, no way. Like, this just got to be like, like a mound visit. Like, I don't know. This is just, you know, Schloss has something here. Oh, what? He's calling the bullpen? What? The guy who, you know, relieved the game before also coming in. And Jacob Palish comes in, throws like a devastating slider and
one pitch strikeout.
Yeah. Just like,
I mean, Aggies all over Twitter at that point were like, this is, I you have to continue trusting Jacob or Coach Schloss at this point. Like, he made the right call in that one moment. And like, that's, you can't doubt him now.
If he hadn't already gotten the full buy-in of the Aggie fan base, he did with that one move and then clinching the Omaha trip. That was so gutsy.
So gutsy, yeah.
One more thing I want to talk about with A&M, and I mean, if I think that 3 weeks ago feels like a lifetime ago, 3 years ago really feels like a lifetime ago, but 3 years ago, Micah Dallas pitched in Omaha for Texas Tech. So he has Omaha experience on a team that does not have, I don't think anyone else on that Aggie team has been to Omaha before. But he had two starts against Michigan.
Brick Launch.
Oh, yeah.
Jacob Polish. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Clunch was on Clunch was on the 2018 Oregon State National Championship team.
You're right. And then Polish was on the 2021 there. Stanford Omaha team. So, wow, that's actually kind of wild that two of A&M's most important pitchers have actually pitched in Omaha before.
Yeah, a starter, a reliever, and a catcher. That's kind of who you want.
Unfortunately, it didn't go great for Dallas when he pitched in the College World Series. He's pitched four innings and given up seven earned runs against Michigan.
Yikes.
So hopefully he likes his second trip to Omaha a little bit more if you're an Aggie fan. So let's hop now to the Knoxville Super Regional. I think, I mean, this is probably the headline. We buried the lead a little bit here. number one goes down to John Michael Bertrand and the boys. But no, John Michael Bertrand actually lost his start, started game two against Tennessee and lost it. And if you told me that Notre Dame would have won a series at Knoxville against Tennessee where their ace loses his game, I would have called you crazy, because somehow Tennessee squeaked out game one, came from behind in game three. They kept that game close despite multiple chances by Tennessee. It just kind of felt like one of those games where Tennessee was going to continue just to break it open, but kept stranding runners on base in game three. Finally, Notre Dame chipped away at that lead, took the lead via the long ball, and didn't look back. And man, Rocky Top is feeling like Rocky Bottom right now.
Wow. That was a nice. Yeah, we probably should have talked about this in our biggest surprises, but I mean, this Notre Dame team, they pitch and play defense well, everything that you'd expect a well-coached team to do. And it seems like Jarrett, what's his name? What's his last name? Link Jarrett. Okay. Link Jarrett has earned himself some money either from Notre Dame or maybe Florida State.
Yeah, I think let's take a quick step back for some coaching news. Eric Backich just signed with Clemson. And if Michigan can't keep Eric Backich, I don't think Notre Dame is keeping Link Jarrett. Like, yeah. I think that in the pecking order, I mean, maybe Big Ten versus ACC, I just feel like almost certainly Link Jarrett is gone next year, is my gut. Like, I it's hard for me to see a world where he's still at Notre Dame.
That's the classic mama's calling. Like, he played at Florida State in the 90s, I think, and or mid to late 90s. And
on the same team as Mike Martin Jr.
Yeah, so he's probably going to go home, but we'll see.
Yeah, I would be curious if he wins a national championship, if that influences things.
Yeah.
Like, if Link Jarrett wins a national championship and Notre Dame comes and says, hey, we'll give you $1.5 million to stay here or something like that, maybe that would do it. But
that would do it for me. Notre Dame, if you're listening, I will coach for like $500,000.
start bidding there. Yeah. I'll take 450. I'll go under that.
I'll go 300.
Bid to the bottom. But yeah, biggest surprise of the weekend for sure has to be what Notre Dame did to Tennessee. And, you know, it's interesting. Notre Dame came into that series really aggressive on the base pass, because that's kind of one of the things that Tennessee's been famous about. If they had any weakness, was holding runners. And Tennessee actually did a really good job of picking off guys, catching runners, stealing, getting outs on the bases against Notre Dame. So despite the fact that Notre Dame wasn't able to implement that aggressive base running strategy very successfully, they were able to take advantage of the short walls. I mean, both Poole and Oppo Tacos. I mean, Oppo Tacos was probably the word of the weekend. I mean, opposite field home runs all postseason. And there are probably no other super where there's more of those than the Knoxville one. All right, let's hop over to Stanford, where Stanford won in spite of their ace, Alex Williams, which is another one of those wild statements that you just didn't really think you could say coming out of a super regional. He did not get through the second inning of game one, did not pitch again in the super, and somehow Stanford still won that. Somehow Stanford still almost won his start. So he gives up 7 runs. That game was basically out of hand, what it felt like, but credit to Stanford's offense, because apparently no game is ever out of hand if you're batting 5 guys who can hit out of the ballpark. And Stanford was able to chip away at a 13-6 lead in the bottom of the 9th via 4 home runs in the bottom of the 9th. They actually had the winning run at home, at bat, 13-12, and were not able to get the job done. And it kind of felt like UConn was going to run away with that series. I mean, you don't think of Stanford in their pitching depth, but the bullpen came out to play. Quinn Matthews and Bruno, the reliever on their team, probably has the best stuff, who all weekend long, the commentators for that one were making Encanto references.
Like, we can talk about Bruno.
Yeah, we do want to talk about Bruno. This guy is the best stuff on anyone at Stanford. And a little erratic, but very fun, very entertaining guy to watch. Able to get the job done. The offense totally mashed the rest of the way, and Stanford was able to win their home super, which is the first time Stanford has hosted a super regional in 2 decades, despite their success. Whoa. Yeah. They've just been relegated to road supers for a long time. So they were able to win the super. I mean, it feels like they're hosting a regional every year, but just never top 8. They were this year, and now they are the highest remaining seed left in Omaha.
Yeah, and like it's Stanford's offense that is like making me think they're really dangerous. They're pitching. I mean, this is not a typical West Coast team, but like there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 home runs by Stanford alone in game one. And a lot of those were in the last like two innings.
Yeah, half of those in the last inning.
Yeah. And then there were like two more on Saturday and then two more on, or sorry, Sunday and then two more on Monday. Like they just keep hitting bombs. And we'll get into this a little bit later, but I think they can continue doing it in Omaha. I don't know. We'll get into our predictions later.
Yeah, before that, let's keep moving around. Random style, let's go to Fayetteville next, where the Razorbacks traveled to North Carolina and took two games in a row from the Tar Heels. I mean, it's the story of the season. Connor Nolan has been a bona fide ace for the Razorbacks, which is not necessarily, I think we thought he'd be okay, he'd be good, but he's been an ace, and he had another great start against North Carolina. And then in game two there, they were able to walk it off and make really nice and tidy work of a North Carolina team that had been playing really well, won the ACC, and had looked like a dangerous team for Arkansas to play. Hagan Smith, again, pitched from the bullpen and gave up one run on the weekend, but looked pretty good out of the bullpen. And I think is a really fun now bullpen piece for Arkansas. And I fully expect him to mostly pitch out of the bullpen in Omaha. But Razorbacks, after a year removed from the Tennessee experience, winning the two SEC titles, number one overall seed, losing in a home super to an ACC team that was a scrappy underdog in three-game series, basically totally total repeat of what happened a year ago. But now the following year, Arkansas is heading into Omaha. And has to feel pretty good about what they have after that nice super regional performance.
Yeah, there's been a few times where like the number one overall seed or a really good team had the chance to win it and then came back and won it all the year before. I think it was 2015 Virginia. Is that what people have been talking about?
Yeah, 2015. Yeah, the year before they won the national championship, though they lost in the final.
Yeah. Yeah. So they maybe Arkansas can do it, and maybe Tennessee will do it next year. It's pretty much guaranteed since baseball writers are getting a little bit lazy.
Exactly. So elsewhere, so Arkansas and Stanford will pair up in that first game in Omaha. And so we already talked about the College Station Regional, and they were paired up with the Virginia Techs. We already talked about the College Station Super Regional, and they were paired up with the Blacksburg Super Regional. So let's talk a little bit about OU Virginia Tech. OU was able to get out of that after winning games one and game three. The Sooners returned to Omaha for the first time in a while, and it feels like they have upped their pecking order a little bit in terms of the Big 12 power ranking in recent history. I mean, with TCU and Texas Tech having so many Omaha trips in the last few years, and Texas obviously still being the dominant force in the Big 12, OU is reminding everyone that they won a national title before, that they're a legitimate team. I think that in terms of what you look for in an ace, Oklahoma absolutely has it, and you got to feel pretty good about what Jake Bennett is going to do for you. So OU, kind of a little bit of a messy game too there, but was able to get the job done against a Virginia Tech team that has still not made it to the College World Series.
Mm. Yeah, it's a little unfortunate for this really cool story in Virginia Tech. I mean, they don't have a ton of baseball success historically, and like this was their first super. In the 23 years of doing supers. And this would have been their first Omaha appearance, like you said, but they still have a really cool offense. I mean, I wonder, it can't be, but I wonder if the hammer, like not allowing the hammer at home was the reason for that. Probably
yeah.
Not.
Yeah. Virginia Tech though. I mean, they have a couple dudes on that team. Gavin Cross is obviously a top prospect. Jack Hurley, left fielder, it's gotta be one of the most talented defensive left fielders in college baseball. Really fun team, but OU overwhelmed them with offense. I absolutely love Peyton Graham. I mean, he's the like skinniest guy who can hit the hardest. He is like got to be like 140, 6'4" or whatever. I don't know. He's just such a wiry dude, but has a just really efficient swing, a lot of pop, and seems to be becoming like an emotional leader of this OU team. So I think look to him to be one of the stars in Omaha. He's really got some swagger to him now that Oklahoma's playing really well.
Yeah, they're definitely on a bit of a hot streak.
Yeah, OU and A&M both haven't lost a series in like 2 months. So
it'd be a fun first game.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun one. So we talked a little bit about Notre Dame and how they knocked off Tennessee, and they will match up with Texas. Texas ripped the hearts out of East Carolina fans. Texas was down in that game too. Jacob Jenkins-Cowart for ECU was called out at home, but then call was overturned, gave ECU that 7-2 lead. The crowd's going absolutely wild. You just feel all the momentum is on ECU's side in that game. They have this lead. And then, I mean, you talked about A&M's offense being clutch. Texas's offense has to be considered one of the most clutch offenses that's going to be in Omaha as well. I mean, again, they're another type of team where 1-9, they can hurt you. Ivan Melendez broke Chris Bryant's BB Corps era home run record over the weekend. Just wild. And just no signs of stopping him. We'll probably get a couple more in Omaha and maybe several more if they continue to win. But you got to feel for East Carolina. This really, really, really felt like their chance.
Especially like, I mean, they were up, 8. I guess they tied it up in the top of the ninth, 8-8, I think.
So it was like 7-2 at one point?
Yeah, it was 7-2 going in the top of the seventh, and then Texas scored 7 more runs to tie it, to walk it off eventually.
Yeah.
Which, people were complaining, how can you have someone walk off someone else on their home field? But it's how they do it. It's fine.
I don't love that.
It's the rules. It's fine.
Yeah. I think I'm officially on the side that the host should always be the home team in regionals and super regionals, any games they play in. I think that's where I landed. I've been debating that. I just hate the idea of road teams walking off a team at home. That just feels so wrong.
Then I don't know how to figure out the other, who should be home team in the other games.
The same, you can use the same higher rule, seed. Like higher seed. And then like, if they've already played, swap, and then like, you know, like those rules are fine. Like I get it. When it's neutral site, you can use those convoluted rules, but when it's a team at home, I think they should be the home team.
when I was at the College Station regional, I was talking to some people who like work for ESPN and doing some like official scoring and stuff like that. And one of them was saying that A&M will count this game as a neutral game, but if they win, they'll count it as a home win, which is just really weird. Like it goes in as a home game, but like there are some weird things about it, just like how they count it in their history books.
Interesting. Yeah, because those media guides and those history books have to have like official like determinations on those games, and I guess technically they're all neutral site games in some
but it's way. At their home place.
Just toss that out the window. They're home. They're the home team. They earned that right. I mean, if you wanted to be a top 16 seed, you should have won more games.
You should have won more.
Yeah. That's my take on that. All right. Fair. So we have a couple more supers to get through. Two more SEC West teams that made it to Omaha, Auburn and Ole Miss. Ole Miss just crushed the spirit of Southern Miss fans. Two shutout wins in Hattiesburg, and Ole Miss just feels like a team on a mission. Totally different team than the team that got swept against Tennessee. This team was 7-14 in SEC play at one point, and then went on a 7-2 streak to finish the year. So yeah, so they won two of the last three series. They went one and out at the SEC tournament, though. A team that was on the bubble now is going to Omaha. And they've done it by beating Miami, by beating Arizona, and now beating Southern Miss. So quite a few teams that can pitch in there. And they will do it knowing that they beat one of their rivals, Southern Miss. So it's got to feel really good for a team that was considering, I mean, maybe who knows what the team is considering. Fans that were considering Mike Bianco getting fired just a few months ago now has
his
coveted second trip to Omaha.
Yeah, that's crazy. There were I saw a comparison somewhere on Twitter of Chris Lemonis, Mississippi State's head coach, and Mike Bianco, like both played in the SEC, or maybe even someone played at Southern Miss, I don't know. But and then like both have made it to two Omaha appearances, both were in talks of getting fired because they hadn't done anything. And then last year, Chris Lemonis won a national title, and who knows about Mike Bianco this year. They are definitely on an insane hot streak, and just Hunter Elliott is the stud pitcher, shut him out and to close it out. And I think he also pitched in the regional round too and did really well. And so it's just in the postseason, you need a guy to come on and do really well. And he's doing that.
And he was in their bullpen to start the year. So he's
really
played a big starting role. I think maybe you're thinking of Lemonis playing at the Citadel, was maybe?
Citadel. That's what it was. I knew it was somewhere in the South.
Yeah. So he made the College World Series as a player. Yeah. And Bianco did it with LSU. So, that was SEC Baseball put out that tweet.
That's what it was.
Saying like Chris Lemonis and Mike Bianco have had some similar career trajectories. I think that Ole Miss fans wouldn't mind Bianco taking after Lemonis a little bit if it meant winning that College World Series title.
Yeah, then you couldn't have old Mississippi State fans holding that over your head for too long.
Yeah, no Ole Miss at home again this year. Instead, we have Omaha, which is a little one of the clunkier ones of those, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some. I mean, Omaha's is really fun. Yeah. See what else is there.
I like Omahoos, Virginia.
Omahoos, that's good.
Chomaha for the Gauchos, Santa Barbara. It's a good one.
Domeaha or something for the Golden Domers.
Yeah.
Notre Dame. I like that.
That one's all right.
I like it.
And then what is it? Just Aggies in Omaha? I think.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if A&M has one or
Omahorns.
Oh, okay. I had seen like University of Texas at Omaha.
Yeah, Cal State
they've been,
does that. They do Cal State.
Texas has been more than half of the Omaha like times, like more than half of 75.
Total. Yeah, 38 of 75 Omaha appearances or Omaha College World Series have had Texas in them.
Yeah,
which is
pretty crazy.
That is an absurd stat. Yeah, let's just think about that. Stew on that one for a minute, listener. 38 of 75 College World Series have had Texas.
I think it's more than. More than 15, more than number two. So like 16 or 17, more than the second place.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then, so the last super to talk about is Auburn going on the road at Oregon State. And that was a little bit of a funky super. So Cooper Jerpy, Oregon State's ace, had like a stomach bug or something. He just didn't feel great on for game one. So
quote virus.
Yeah, it was a virus, but I mean, apparently he was fine pitching the next day, but they said that he was kind of on an 80 pitch limit, and he went, I think, just under 90 pitches in the end. He had a really nice start against Auburn, and that was the game that Oregon State actually won. Auburn won the first and third game in that. But Auburn, I mean, do we need to talk about like Butch Thompson? I feel I sent out a few tweets because like I feel like we need to talk about Butch Thompson more. This guy, and like he's made it to Omaha twice with Auburn in his 6 years, one super regional appearance, one regional appearance, but beyond that, he has missed the tournament twice, but in the SEC West, making it to Omaha 2 out of 6 years, that's pretty darn impressive. Like I think that Butch Thompson has to be in the conversation as one of the best coaches right now in college baseball.
Yeah. I mean, especially having them, like his team picked last in the SEC, maybe just the SEC West. I don't know about the total SEC, but to start the year, and now they're in Omaha. It's kind of the same story of as A&M and maybe even Virginia Tech. Like their coaches having them like just have an incredible turnaround, and same with Butch Thompson. And like this is just like Auburn to have so many up and down seasons, like missing the SEC tournament, making it to Omaha, missing the whole tournament, making it to Omaha the next year. It's a That's classic Auburn.
It is, yeah. Auburn,
yeah, chaos. Auburn
as a school seems to do best when the expectations are the lowest, and that holds true for this year. This year is taking advantage of the transfer portal, which I actually think I want to say that makes me think even more highly of Butch Thompson, because for better or for worse, I don't want to make a judgment on like what should be changed to the transfer portal, because that's a whole other different conversation. But the reality of our game right now is the transfer portal is a big factor. And he was able to see that. He had the foresight to see that early on and was able to go in and recruit from the transfer portal better than almost anyone else in the country. I mean, I think Schloss would be the other guy you look at and think did a great job with transfers. And I think for a coach to be able to adapt like that is very impressive. Like, I think when you think of the opposite, or when I think of what coach is kind of the opposite right now, I think of Tim Corbin. Tim Corbin has done an amazing job of recruiting at Vanderbilt, but hasn't taken advantage of the transfer portal in the same way. And I would be shocked if Vanderbilt doesn't get a couple big transfers this offseason. Like, Tim Corbin's not a foolish guy. Kind of like what we saw with Nick Saban, maybe in college football, like Nick Saban's felt a little reluctant to take advantage of transfers, maybe when that first became a big deal, but now he's kind of back on that. I think good coaches adapt, and Butch Thompson had the foresight to be able to adapt quickly.
Yeah, that's the huge thing, is adaptability. Like, that, I mean, whenever the whole thing that everyone knows, probably if you're a fan of football, whatever, when Nick Saban said, "Is this what we want football to be?" then he went and did that because he's like, "I can do it better than you." And so, like, the good schools, they will continue to, like, the good coaches and the good schools will give their coaches the resources to be able to adapt faster than anyone else. And that's why we might see a little bit of a disparity, or
I'm really curious if Auburn can keep him. I think Auburn is a premier enough job that they can keep him, but I do feel like if there's ever a vacancy at I don't know, maybe like I'm trying to imagine like what would actually pull him, and when I think about the other good jobs out there, a lot of them are filled right now. But like, I don't know, if David Pierce decides to retire for some reason, you know, like would Texas go after a Butch Thompson? Like, I mean, when you think about the jobs available right now, is Florida State a high enough profile job to pull Butch Thompson away? My instinct is no. Like, I don't think so.
My instinct is yes.
Oh, interesting.
But I mean, he might be like one of the, like, lower on the tiers. I don't know. There's a lot of really good jobs open right now. Like USC, Florida State, Michigan now, Clemson was just, and maybe Notre Dame now will be, but there's a lot of really good jobs open, and it could send a cascade of coaching cycle madness.
I fully expect there to be some pretty wild coaching cascades. I am really curious about the USC coaching search, because that, I think there's a case to say that's a premier coaching job. I mean, it's just definitely a premier coaching job on the West Coast.
Yeah,
lost its shine a little bit as USC has been down at this point for several years. But here's my prediction for how this shakes out. So Andrew Checkitz, the UC Santa Barbara head coach, was apparently being wooed the last time USC made their coaching search. And I guess the number wasn't right, because he stayed at Santa Barbara. And UC Santa Barbara is obviously a pretty solid West Coast coaching job. But rumor is Kendall Rogers is still thinking that Andrew Checkitz would be a good option. And Andrew Checkitz, like, on a podcast before this season, basically even said that, like, that he was interested in other jobs. I don't know. It was like the most, like, blunt. I think it was the Baseball America podcast. He's basically was like, "Oh yeah, you know, maybe another opportunity will come around," or something like that. Like, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it was just like,
he's trying to get money,
like, particularly committed to Santa Barbara. So I feel like this is the prime time for him to go to USC. And then I could see someone like Steve Rodriguez from Baylor going back to Santa Barbara, because he is a West Coast guy, coached at Pepperdine for a long time. So I think that, you know, Baylor cut ties with him, but I think he could end up on the West Coast. But I think the whole point there with USC is Andrew Checkitz the best they can do? Andrew Checkitz is a good option, a guy who's won 40 plus games at UC Santa Barbara a couple times. Or is USC going to be able to go after some of these top candidates that are primarily being wooed by Southern schools? I think that's going to be a fun storyline to follow in the offseason.
Yeah, maybe they change it up and go somewhere else and go Southeastern for their coaching search. I don't know.
Well, at this point, Southeastern coaches have demonstrated they can recruit Southern California.
Yeah.
So it's not like you need a West Coast guy necessarily anymore.
No.
I think it's more of a matter, can you convince a Southeast guy or a Southern guy to make it out to California? And we will see. But before the coaching carousel gets going in full force, we have Omaha around the corner starting, depending on when you're listening to this, tomorrow, maybe in a couple days. And I want to talk about some points with Omaha that I think are the most relevant. And let's start off with this discussion of who has pitching depth in Omaha, because at first glance, it feels like almost nobody.
Yeah, you're right.
So maybe let's start with Arkansas. I feel like Arkansas is probably the team that has the most pitching depth in Omaha. I think part of my feeling on that is Hagen Smith moving to the bullpen. I really like that. If he can be a consistent contributor there, that sets up for Connor Nolan to do his thing, for Will McIntyre, who's been a really solid number two. I mean, Connor Nolan went, 6 2/3 in the Super Regional, didn't give up a run. Will McIntyre went 5 2/3, didn't give up a run. So both of them had really good starts on the road in Chapel Hill. I mean, with a little bit of extra rest that you get during bracket play, I feel like you might even be able to get Connor Nolan in a regional or a bracket final type situation, or maybe a if necessary game, if Arkansas manages to win, and then maybe lose that game three, their fourth game, you probably would see Connor Nolan back. And when I think about that gets me excited for Arkansas. That's a lot going for that pitching staff.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially helpful when you need all the bullpen help you can get in a time like this with so many games back to back. I mean, we do have the extra day in between, but if there's like one blowout or something, maybe you can have Hagen Smith go like 5 innings in relief and eat up some bullpen time. Like, you need something like that, because he was a starter and now bullpen, so he can go long if he needs to. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I like that. I like having this guy that you know you can stretch him out a little bit, but you can also use him for one inning and give his max effort in that one inning. I really like that he offers you some versatility. Brady Tiger obviously has been really good for them too. So there's some good options for sure. Zach Morris, there's some dudes in that Arkansas bullpen, which you can't really say for a lot of the Omaha teams.
Yeah, it's true. And the next team though for me would be, I think, Texas's pitching depth. They have, I mean, obviously,
which is crazy, because like a month ago you couldn't have said that, but like the way they pitched in the postseason has been really good.
Yeah, Tristan Stevens and Pete Hansen have been their guys, and I think Tristan Stevens went 7 innings or something. I think I remember.
He pitched in all three games against East Carolina. He went 6 innings in that game three. He's mostly been doing it from the bullpen, but he started that game three, so I think he went 7 innings on the weekend. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and then I mean, Lucas Gordon has also been doing really well, and like, so they have some guys that can help them. The bullpen. Maybe the bullpen depth is a little bit iffy, but if you need, maybe you can bring Tristan Stevens back for another game, because he showed he can pitch in multiple games.
Well, and you still pitch him in every single game.
Yeah. But yeah, with that extra weekend or extra day in between, he could come back in for 1 and 3 or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
2 and 4.
It does make it tough, because there's less rest between the bracket play and the championship series play. So that might make it tough there. They shorten that by a day. But there's still some rest and then bracket play. But I think the way the starting pitching sets up for Texas makes you feel like that they could be pushed to an elimination game and be okay. I mean, exactly like what happened in East Carolina. Hansen has one of his worst starts of the year. They lose that game, but they still win the series. So, I mean, Texas can do something like that on the road against a top 8 seed. That's, I think, generally bodes well for their ability to hang with it in terms of pitching. So I have this theory about pitching in Omaha. I think that the whole College World Series is going to be determined by basically four guys. And here are those four guys. So I think Connor Nolan, I think if he pitches twice in bracket play, could basically win Arkansas that bracket. And I think that 2 6-inning starts would be enough. I think he will go up against Alex Williams to start that bracket off. Alex Williams for Stanford has had 2 really bad starts in the postseason. I think that if Alex Williams has another one of his 1 1/3 innings giving up 7 runs start, yikes, that basically eliminates Stanford from the College World Series. They were able to get through the regional and super regional without him pitching well. Quality of teams is going up. So I think that Connor Nolan versus Alex Williams is one of the most important matchups in all the College World Series. If they can get 6 innings or 5 innings even from Alex Williams and stay in that game, that gives Stanford a much better chance of winning that game. And then all of a sudden, I mean, anytime you win game one, your odds of winning the whole thing go way up. So I think that matchup is one of the most important matchups. But then in the other bracket, I think two dudes, Pete Hansen, we already talked about, and then Nathan Detmer. I think if Nathan Detmer brings his ace stuff, I'd like the way the Aggies set up in the winner's bracket. I think that with what Micah Dowles has been doing, he's been giving them just enough. And if Nathan Detmer can go six or seven innings and A&M can save that bullpen, I think that I would favor them against whoever comes out of the Texas Notre Dame game.
Yeah, I mean, A&M really needs Detmer to go longer than what he's done lately. He's gone less than four a few times before this past start, where he went 4 1/3, I think. And he's, I don't know if it's the blister that he's been dealing with still or what, but he got hit really hard against Louisiana and inconsistently just all over the yard. And then Louisville, I think he did fine. I think they only allowed 3 runs total in the game, so it wasn't.
That was a good Louisville offense. That was a solid outing, yeah, for sure, but just wasn't a very long outing.
Right. You just need more innings. And I mean, obviously A&M will trust their guys to go more innings if they need to, because they have a few midweek starters in their bullpen that can go more than 4. But if Detmer can go 5 or 6 or 7 maybe with only allowing 2 runs or less, this A&M offense can carry them to possibly to the College World Series final. We'll see. This is a bigger ballpark slightly than they're maybe used to, and against better pitching than they've seen.
Yep. I think that the extra rest in the bracket play will help Texas A&M a lot. I think you probably can pitch Menifee and Palish almost every game. You're not going to want to, but like for sure, if you're game one, game two of bracket play, those guys are going to be the first couple guys out of the bullpen, especially if you get the lefty matchups. And so I feel fairly strongly that A&M goes the way of Detmer. And I think you can say the same thing about Stanford and Williams, and maybe to a lesser extent, Hansen and Texas and Nolan in Arkansas. But I think those are the 4 most important pitchers in Omaha.
Yeah. And then Jake Bennett's pretty good too. He's OU's ace. And if I don't know if they have another solid guy behind him, but if he goes 7 and shuts down A&M, and then their bullpen can come in and continue shutting down A&M, I think that he could probably pitch again in game, and if necessary, game if they need to, maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
that could help OU.
I agree that my theory is limited, but I guess my thought process with Jake Bennett is that I think he's going to pitch well. Like, I don't know. I feel less worried about Jake Bennett. I feel like so some of the reasons why I picked the guys that I picked was that I think Alex Williams and Nathan Detmer have been really hit or miss lately. Pete Hansen was hit or miss in the Super Regional. And I don't think Connor Nolan has not at all been hit or miss, so maybe I should take him off my list. But I do feel like Arkansas leans a little bit more on their pitching staff, so I feel like he is really important for that team. I think OU's offense is so good that I assume Jake Bennett's going to do well. And I think that, OU's offense would be able to bail him out if he doesn't pitch well. But maybe you could say the same story for A&M.
Yeah.
And then maybe might as well mention John Michael Bertrand here, because, I mean, he is the dude for Notre Dame, despite having some troubles against Tennessee. But to be fair, who hasn't? So I want to talk now one more question about the College World Series. Let's talk a little bit about the offense. So I feel like juiced ball has been a conversation that's happened throughout the postseason. And we haven't always seen a ton of offense in Omaha, but will there still be homers in Omaha this season? What do you think?
I think so. Yeah. Last year broke the record for formerly TD Ameritrade Park, now a Charles Schwab, but they're not a sponsor, so I don't really have to feel like I need to say their name. That broke the record for home runs in that ballpark in the College World Series, 28 homers in 16 games. And that's only been since 2011 in that ballpark, I don't have the numbers on me, but I'm sure that's just numbers have been rising as the talks of juice balls. I don't know. I think there will probably be more homers this year than last year. So it's going to continue to break records, because that's what we've seen. Like throughout the postseason, all we've seen is broken records and like individual homer run broken records and team broken records for a single season. I think we're going to keep seeing it.
You're starting to sound like a broken record over there, Kyle.
Yeah.
I agree, especially because it's going to be like 100 plus degrees in Omaha. I think the ball is going to fly. I think you're more likely to see pitcher's fatigue in that type of weather. So I think it's going to be hot. I think the ball is going to fly. I think, yeah, we averaged almost 2 home runs a game last year in Omaha.
Crazy.
Yeah. So like, I am not worried about these homer heavy offenses which is true for almost every offense that's heading to Omaha. A lot of these teams are good at hitting the long ball. Leading up now to, let's make some picks. So if you haven't checked out our website, collegebaseball.info, we have a piece up that is our staff picks for each side of the bracket and for the College World Series champion. Kyle, break it down for me, left side of the bracket, the Southwest Reunite plus Notre Dame Invitational.
Yeah, this one, I was writing my piece for our website, which might be up today or tomorrow. You can check it out at collegebaseball.info. I was going through it, and it's the trendy pick here is Texas, because they have a pretty consistent overall team, just maybe not enough bullpen depth is the only like real flaw that you can see in them. But it's so rare that the trendy pick wins that we see, like Tennessee this year, Arkansas last year, UCLA year before that. So I think I'm going to go maybe bucking the trend a little bit here. I picked Notre Dame to win this bracket and make it out of this bracket. And A&M is my runner up in this one, but yeah, I don't know. I don't feel great about it. It's so hard to pick these. All these teams are really good. Don't need to say that, but who is your pick here?
So I'm kind of picking on the fly because I have debated this side of the bracket so much.
It's hard.
I feel like there's a case for all four of these teams. And that's that every single Omaha, like ever, that's just a lame excuse for any sort of pundit to make. So I get it. It's a lame excuse. These teams are hard to choose between. But if you look at the most difficult path, Notre Dame has done this all on the road against the number one team too. And I mean, that's just really impressive. Texas's regional was really weak, and ECU, really tough place to play. Texas made it through that. A&M's played all their games at home, but haven't lost. And I mean, they made it to the semis of the SEC tournament. They haven't lost a series in months and months. And maybe the only team hotter than them is OU, who they play first, where they did win their conference tournament. They also haven't lost a series in months. And they did drop some games, one in the Gainesville regional and one in the Blacksburg super regional. But I mean, you gotta like where these teams are at, and you don't get to Omaha as a cold team, like, right? You don't get to Omaha with your stars struggling, and none of these teams have. At the end of the day, my pick is going to be Texas over OU in the semis is where I'm going here.
Interesting.
So I'm picking the opposite two teams as you.
So that way we have our bases covered, right?
Yeah, exactly. here's my thought process. I think Jake Bennett outduels Detmer, and Oklahoma barely scrapes by in game one. And that's the big determining thing for me, is that I think that A&M can't make it out of the loser's bracket. I think if A&M wins that game, I think I might have them winning the national title. I think that's how important that game one is for A&M. But right now I'm leaning OU wins that game. I think Texas should feel a little bit better about Pete Hansen than John Michael Bertrand. And then I think Texas will probably have a couple homers against the Notre Dame bullpen. So give me Texas in game one, OU in their game one. I probably would have A&M over Notre Dame in loser's game. And then, you know what? Maybe in that rematch, A&M could outslug OU.
I think they can. I think that was my reason for A&M and as the runner up, just because they have the offense and they've shown it consistently lately.
I'm changing my pick. I'm saying A&M loses in the semis to Texas.
That's spicy either way, because both of those teams hate Texas.
Yeah, so Texas makes it to the championship series with a semifinal win against A&M. which would possibly be the most disappointing season to but most disappointing ends the most exciting season in Aggie baseball in a long time.
Yeah, probably.
Man, if you're an Aggie fan, you are an Aggie fan. Would you rather go 0-2 in the College World Series and never play Texas, or would you rather lose in the College World Series semis?
To Texas?
Yeah, to Texas.
Okay, then 0-2.
Yeah, I feel like that would be some...
I'm losing either way, right?
Yeah, it's true. You're not making it to the College World Series Championship Series. If that's going to happen, might as well not play Texas.
Yeah.
Which is funny because the same sort of thing happened in the regional with A&M, where everyone was thinking, oh yeah, Texas A&M TCU is going to happen right away. And it took a little while before they actually played each other, but they did get that rivalry game then.
Yeah, and they squashed, I think the last time A&M, I saw this on Twitter, the last time A&M went to Omaha, they lost to TCU first and then Louisville first and then knocked out by TCU. And this year they squashed both of those curses and they beat TCU, knocked them out, beat Louisville, knocked them out.
Man, exercising some demons in College Station.
Yep.
I mean, it does feel very fitting then that A&M would play OU and then maybe Texas. Like, they'd have to go through all of the, like, all of the bad juju, get rid of all of it before they go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now that I have confidently made my picks for the left side of the bracket.
So confident.
Let's go to the right side.
We should probably talk about, I don't know, maybe we don't have to, maybe, but OU and A&M, we were looking at the stats and stuff, how so very comparable these two teams are. It's actually really kind of crazy how, like, both these defenses are really bad, the offenses are really good.
The worst two defenses in Omaha.
Yeah, and then two, like, pretty hot offenses. A lot of the stats don't like them to, like, have, like, they have the lowest odds of all these eight teams to win everything. So, yeah, it's, I don't know. That's all.
It's interesting how Jake Bennett, I would say he's probably a step ahead of what Nathan Detmer has done, but then OU's number two guy, Cade Horton, is maybe comparable to Micah Dallas, maybe a step behind Micah Dallas. Cade Horton went into the postseason with an ERA of 8 and has dropped it to 5.5. So he's done pretty well for OU. Yeah, he's only given up 5 runs in the postseason, has gone at least 5 innings in all 3 of his starts. So, I mean, you feel pretty good about what he's done. But it's kind of similar to A&M for that number two of, like, you don't quite know what you're going to get. They're pitching pretty well lately. So A&M and OU, yeah, feel shockingly similar in a lot of ways. All right, let's move it on to the right side of the bracket, where I'm going to toss it to you while I still make my decisions.
Yeah, so I wrote up this pick, this piece, and this is the SEC plus Stanford bracket, which is
the SEC West.
I'm sorry, the SEC West plus one team from the West.
Kind of feels like they should swap A&M and Stanford just to make it a SEC West bracket.
Yeah, but I mean, A&M won the SEC West this year, so, you know, just give it to them, right?
Is that how that works?
Yeah. I went ahead and picked Arkansas coming out of this bracket. Their pitching depth, like we talked about already, their pitching depth is just consistent and better than the rest of these. They're playing up to their preseason expectations, but then again, so is Ole Miss. So it's gonna be tough to beat Ole Miss. But I think if they can send Ole Miss to the losers bracket, no, actually meet up with them second. But yeah, so I'm actually changing it right now in my mind. I have Ole Miss as the runner up just because of, like what you said, if Arkansas can beat them in game one, Arkansas can beat Stanford in game one, then they're probably not going to get out of the loser's bracket just because they don't have the pitching depth as the other teams. So I have Arkansas winning this bracket and Ole Miss is the runner up.
Yep. I'm actually going probably the same direction. I'm definitely picking Arkansas to win this. The thing that I'm having play out in my head right now is if Stanford loses that game one, I don't hate them in a loser's bracket because
they have the offense.
They have the offense. But right now I think the way that Hunter Elliott and Dylan DeLucia are pitching for Ole Miss, I feel pretty good about that. And I think Ole Miss will handle Auburn. And I think that it will be a tough task Ole Miss to beat Arkansas. So give me the Hogs over Ole Miss. And then in my mind, maybe Stanford can knock off, maybe I would say Stanford Auburn would be a toss up in that loser's bracket. but I would like Ole Miss over the winner of that again, probably. So Arkansas over Ole Miss to set up the matchup of all time there, Arkansas versus Texas and the College World Series final for me.
Yeah, Texas is having to go through their three, depends on how old the person you ask is, but their three main rivals.
Yeah, and Notre Dame, which I feel like, I don't know, my experience with Texas fans is they don't love Notre Dame fans for some reason. I don't know, there's some history maybe there, football. So I don't think Texas particularly likes anyone left in this, in the college.
Yeah.
You could probably say the same for almost all of them. Stanford feels like a little bit like an odd man out here. Stanford and Notre Dame are big rivals, I guess. So
they are in football, at least. Are they still in baseball? You went to Stanford.
They don't actually play each other ever in baseball, but I'm sure like a casual Stanford fan, a casual Notre Dame fan will. I mean, Notre Dame hates Stanford. Like, yeah. So I think that would make for a fun rivalry championship series. But all right, let's make picks. I'm going Arkansas over Texas.
Who did I have winning Notre Dame? I'm going Arkansas over Notre Dame. So Arkansas, you're guaranteed to win the World Series now.
Yeah, and in our we reseeded the eight teams in the College World Series, and no surprise, we both picked Arkansas as the number one team, and now we're picking them to win the national championship. So if you wanted any sort of extra monkey on your back, Arkansas fans, any sort of added pressure, you're getting it from us because we really like the Hogs team in Omaha.
Yeah, I mean, they're so good right now and playing up to their expectations. I think that's it's so hard to pick against a team that is just on fire lately.
Exactly. All right, Kyle, any last thoughts about College World Series before we wrap this thing up?
Get some rest, John, because we had a lot of baseball to watch. And luckily, only two games per day instead of four, like in Hoover. But got a lot to do the next few days.
Get the Pedialyte, hydrate.
Exactly. Yeah.
Get ready for a long week plus of college baseball. It should be great. I think that one thing that I'm really excited about is that a lot of these teams have national level or national level fandom, or at least very, very strong regional fandom. So you know that Omaha is going to be rocking, you know, Razorbacks fans and Longhorns and Sooners and Aggies. And I mean, all these Rebels, like there's going to be a lot of people in Omaha. It's going to be rocking. And you get this nice combination of underdogs, but not anyone that's like, you really don't belong here. Like every team in Omaha clearly has some dudes, you know, some guys who are going to be drafted high. You got talent, you got rivalries, you got a lot going on. This is a really fun College World Series bracket.
Yeah, man, I wish we could go. I liked going to Hoover, but I wish we could go to Omaha this year instead, I feel like.
Yeah, I thought about booking some last minute tickets, but man, for flights are expensive right now.
They're really expensive. I was trying to fly into Des Moines instead of Omaha or Kansas City or something, and it was a little bit better, but it was a 13-hour drive for me right from Houston, so I was like, no, thank you.
Oh man, I haven't checked from Boston. It's probably 30 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, no thanks.
We have the credentials. We just probably can't use them this year.
Damn. Next year.
Next year. And in the meantime, though, we will be multi-screening, watching all the games from home. And it should be a really good time. Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe and rate our podcast. It helps us get the word out. Head over to our website, collegebaseball.info, where you can see all of the content that we talked about in today's podcast. And be sure to follow us on our social media at collegeballnat. We're on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks for listening and have a great week.